Well, I've grown something this year that if you've watched the show for very long, you've heard me talk about, but I really want to dig into it today because I'm really impressed with this plant. It's an edible hibiscus. That's right, an edible hibiscus.
Pretty looking plant.
It's a nice looking plant, and it's real easy to grow. It's drought tolerant. Of course, it's kin to the okra family. So it's drought tolerant.
The okra family.
Okra family. It's easy to grow. It's heat tolerant. Does really good. It's native to Africa. And it produces a seed pod. And I'm going to attempt to cut one off here and explain all this to everybody.
Smells good.
Now, you can plant this in the springtime, and it grows to be a pretty good-sized plant before it starts putting these seed pods on. But you see the seed pod there is wrapped with this red thing that's called a capsicum. Now,
so that was a flower?
There was a flower, that, as you see right there. Hold that flower up right there.
I'm just trying to eat some stuff.
Well, you got to hold off on that. We ain't got there for you yet. So here's the flower, which is a nice pinkish-type flower. Mm-hmm. And then it produces this seed pod is inside of this, but the red part here is what we're concerned about. This is the goodie on the plant, and this is what they call a capsicum. Now, I said I wasn't going to use any
positive
big,
on the pronunciation.
No, I'm going to go there in just a second. I said I wasn't going to use big words again because you know I like to use big words.
Yeah.
So I'm just going to say this red fleshy stuff that surrounds the seed pod.
Mm-hmm.
And then what you do is you peel the red fleshy stuff away.
Mm-hmm. The seed covering.
And you got your seed pod inside there that you can save and dry up to save your seeds. Then you have this part right here, and this is what I call the goodie. This is the goodie part.
These petals?
These petals are the goodie part. So you take the petals and you can boil them down, and you can make several things out of the petals.
A nice little fruity flavor to them.
Citrusy type flavor. Now, we know everything that is dark red or purple in color is just filled with antioxidants. And this particular one here is also loaded up with vitamin C.
Mm-hmm.
So you can make tea out of it. You can make simple syrup out of it. You can make jellies out of it. You can make just regular food coloring out of it.
So you don't want to eat that right there.
No, that's your seed pod. Inside of that is your seeds. So what we have done in the last few days, we've gathered a lot of them. And we boiled them down and we made some products out of it.
Got some treats.
And I would like to share with you today.
I'm hangry.
You hangry?
Yeah, I'm hangry.
Well, the first thing that we're going to share is the tea. Now, this is, some people call it hibiscus tea. You can call it whatever you want to. Hibiscus tea is pretty good.
It's like what we used to have back in college called hunch punch.
No, it ain't quite that. This is a little healthier for you than that is. All right. So what we do is we boil it down and we added a little honey because I'm a big fan of honey and made this. This is real healthy for you, but not only that, it's good. It's refreshing.
I taste the honey.
Now, one thing that we did do that I wished I'd done today and think about was add a bay leaf to it. And if you add a bay leaf to it, it's really nice.
Yeah, that is good. You can give us no ice. Be nice.
You need no ice. Enjoy the flavor. Take it all in.
It's good. I would like to taste it without the honey. But it's pretty good.
Yeah, it is good. So there you have the
So you
tea.
Use this as a as kind of like you would elderberry. You just enjoy this as a drink.
Is you can just enjoy this as a drink.
It's got medicinal benefits.
Oh, absolutely.
Benefits.
You know, it's healthy for you because of the color and the antioxidants. Very high in vitamin C, as I said earlier.
Right, yeah.
So you can enjoy it, but you know, a lot of people want to drink things just because it's good for them. It may not taste good, but I think you can drink this because it's good for you and it tastes good.
Yeah, it does taste good.
But it does have a kind of a citrusy flavor to
Go
it.
Go ahead, you can fill me up there. I'm hangry and thirsty.
Okay, all right, so, man, isn't it just beautiful?
It is pretty.
I'm not much for baker, but if you want to make a red velvet cake and have some natural food coloring, I'm pretty sure you could use that.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so let's move on.
Move on.
Miss Hoss indulged us with a couple of her nice biscuits earlier.
Homemade biscuits.
Well, let's not go that far, okay? She was in kind of a tight. I put a lot of pressure on her there all of a sudden, so.
This looks like them biscuits.
Freezer biscuits.
Freezer section.
What we have here is some jam made from the Rosella.
You call this Rosella jam?
Rosella jam.
It's like your lid's on
there. I'm having some issue there, don't I? You pop that baby off from there. There we go. You got to have a nice wooden doohickey to spread it on.
That's
there.
Required.
Now, I'm not one to have a lot of sugar in my jams and jellies or anything I really make. And I'll tell you the reason why.
Slather that on there.
Well, I'm gonna let you do yours.
Okay.
I like to taste the natural flavors. A lot of times sugar overpowers it for me. That's the reason I like to hold back on, I don't like the real sweet jellies, jams, or any kind of drink because the sugar overpowers me. And I enjoy tasting the natural flavors.
It looks like it's got a lot of sugar in it.
It has some sugar in it. I'm not saying it doesn't, because when you make jelly, you pretty much got to have sugar, but I don't like it with a lot of sugar.
That's pretty good. It's
a little tart.
I've never tasted anything like it before.
Mm-hmm.
It's different.
Right.
But it's good.
So hopefully we'll have sourced some of these seeds, and we can have some of these seeds available later on in the year.
You grow these from transplants?
No, from seeds. Oh, I did grow them from transplants, yeah. I grew the seeds in the greenhouse and transplants. However, this plant is so easy to grow, I think you could direct seed it.
Did you put it on drip or no?
I did put it on drip, but I don't think you would need to, as long as it didn't get extremely dry.
Need a little room. Plants get pretty tall, don't they?
Plants get pretty tall. It's one of those things you don't want to plant early because it is sensitive to cold weather. Just like okra, you want to plant it after you plant everything else.
Okay.
But it's a winter. It was a winter in my garden.
So what would you characterize that as? A flower, a herb? Not a vegetable, right?
I think it's going to be in the herb category. I think that's where it ends up at. Because I struggled with that earlier today when I was sitting around pondering and giving it some deep concentration on what do I categorize this Rosella hibiscus as, and I come up with herbs.
So you wouldn't put it as a flower?
I would not put it as a flower.
Okay.
Although it could double for that, because you know our
calendula.
I almost got that right.
Yeah, it was close.
It has some purpose, some medicinal
purposes too.
I always got that close. Yeah. It has some purposes besides being a pretty flower.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. If you eat enough of it, you'll be susceptible to being healthy.
Yep.
So. Yeah,
that's
always.
So anyhow, that's my take on that. Now I'm gonna move this to the side just for a minute, and I'm gonna come back to that biscuit when you get to flapping that jaw in just a little bit.
That one there got a little crispy on the bottom.
And while you over there eating, I'm gonna flap my jaw just a minute. As y'all well know, I'm working on some projects here. We looked at some microgreens last week. This is a new one here, and this, by all accounts, what research I have done, is the most popular microgreen out there. And this one is sunflower. Sunflower supposedly has the best flavor of any of the microgreens.
I think it's not only the flavor, the texture of it.
No, I actually said it had a little bit of a nutty flavor to it.
No, I'm saying it's got good flavor, but a lot of people like it because of the texture.
The texture, yeah. And it does have, I can taste that little bit of nuttiness on the end. So it makes a good garnish. It makes a good, you can eat it in a salad. And of course, on any, you can pretty much eat it any way you would any other type of green.
Now you need to wait till it drops all the seed heads?
Well, it's kind of to that stage. It's real close. You take your hand and run across there and they pretty much pop off. Probably by tomorrow, they'll all be off from there. You can kind of get them, brush them off. Brush them a little bit and they're coming off.
So how much seed do you use in a
tray?
Man,
that wasn't much. That was a
quarter pound?
That was a little less than a quarter of a pound. So what I'm attempting to do is do enough testing on this to find out the exact methods to grow these that come out the best. And I found a couple of things already that I really didn't know. But also, we want to give the exact measurements on the soil and amount of seed that you would put each flat. Put a lot of seeds in there. Mm-hmm. But that looks really good. I thought it turned out well.
Yeah,
and you know what? That's a lot of greens there. That's
you did a good job.
A family of four could probably eat off that a couple of times.
You did a good job. Now, just so people know, these don't grow back when you cut them.
No, this is a one-time cut.
One-time cut.
And ideally what would happen, and I grew these inside, believe it or not, you would keep you some cool along and along. So every time you harvested some, you'd plant some more coming out. That way you had your constant supply. Now another one is pea. I got to try the pea. I haven't done the pea. There's a dun pea that everybody recommends. I'm gonna try that next, or some variety.
What about
of pea.
Radish? A lot of people do radish.
Radish is beets. A lot of people do the Detroit red beet. So we'll see there. Sunflower turned out good.
And we are, at some point soon, we'll be adding these black oil sunflowers to the site. You can use them as a cover crop. You can just plant you some sunflowers just to kind of run the mill. Some variety, or like I said, they work really well for these microgreens.
You got that jaw full of biscuit, don't you?
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
And I was hungry.
Sometime in the near future, we're going to be offering these, hopefully, these microgreen kits.
Yeah. You're going to get it nailed down to how the people can replicate that really.
Oh, absolutely. And then we'll do some, or I'll do some videos on it showing the successes and the failures that we've had. There are some things you can do to up your game a little bit with it, and a couple of little tricks I have found that works good. So we got that in the works. I'm excited about that.
Good deal, good deal. A couple of things. I'm a little bit behind. I got to start my seeds yesterday. I haven't done it yet. I need to start getting some seeds started. I got a little bit of a feeling we're gonna have a early fall this year.
Huh.
It's been a little cooler at night. It's been cooling off a little bit around my house.
You think so?
Yeah. And I was looking at the forecast next week. We ain't supposed to have anything. It's supposed to be in the 80s, high 80s all week.
What you got to look out for is night temperatures.
Night temperatures.
Pay attention to night temperatures.
It's been cooler at night, in my
opinion. I know. That's one of the important things.
I got a little surprise coming with a video next week. Something I have never... Well, I've done it one time. It didn't work. But something I've never successfully grown in the fall that I'm giving a try. That's going to be interesting. But I got to get my fall pole beans in the ground.
You got to get your onions planted. I spoke to you this morning about
onions
that.
Onions planted. English peas. I'm going to go and get some English peas in. I'm running behind, but I'm going to catch up there. What about you?
I'm running a little bit behind too. I'm ahead of you a step or two on a couple of things. But you know, if you live in zone 8, especially if you live in zone 7, but if you live in zone 7 or 8, you need to be getting things transplanted now. Sometimes when we have these little heat spells come through here, it kind of throws us off a little bit. So maybe we need to wait a little bit. Tell you something, it's time to get those cold crops, cabbage, broccoli, all that kind of stuff, onions and everything planted. And you'll be right on target for your plants coming off to put them in the ground if you live in zone 7 or 8.
I got most of my brassicas are going in my spot tarped off right now, and it's just kind of doing its thing.
We've been on vacation for the last 3 or 4 weeks. It's been hot. We've been kind of laying low a little bit. Now it's time to get back out and get started.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I kind of went back down to one video a week, but we're going to crank that up in the next week or two and get back going there. Y'all don't realize, man, when it's hot out there and I just start sweating, I sweat bad anyway. But
bless your heart.
When you stand out there and in 5 minutes you can be drenched, well, microphone gets wet and it starts acting up, and it's aggravating. It's hard to do it when it's real hot out. It's much more enjoyable to get out there and shoot some videos when it's a little cooler.
Poor thing.
Poor thing. So the last few weeks we've been talking about cold season growing. Jog my memory. We talked about cool season crop rotations last week. And a lot of people are asking, what should you transplant? What should your direct seed? How do you know whether you should do one or the other? Can you do either with some crops? And so this week, in addition to, we got a big Q&A segment coming up because we're going to give away some of those tools we showed last week.
But I'm going to be peeing red.
Peeing red, yeah. I think I might get me another biscuit here. Miss Hoss left me a secret stash right there. Anyway, we wanted to go through these cool weather crops real quick, like, and just talk about what we like to do as far as transplant or direct seed. And this is not like end all be all, you gotta follow this. This is just kind of from my experiences, what I like to do.
Something to just kind of jog you a little bit and kind of remind you the way you need to do these things. And I'll start them out and I'm gonna call them out and you can kind of go through the methodology. How about that?
Sure.
All right, first one's beets.
Beets. So beets are naturally what we call multi-germ crop. You plant one beet seed, Most all your varieties are what they call multi-germ. You plant one beet seed, you get three or four coming up. Same thing with chard. If you want consistently sized beets, you need to thin them out, or you can plant a monogerm variety. We have a monogerm variety called Solo. I've had much better success transplanting beets because they can be a little slow to germinate and get going. And if your weed pressure is not super low, that can be some, you can have some issues there. It does take more work up front, but I can get more consistently shaped, nice beets if I transplant them. You can direct seed them. I'd say if you're going to direct seed them, you might want to go with a monogerm. It's a pain in the butt to get out there and thin them when they're tiny on the ground. If you're transplanting them, you can plant monogerm or multigerm because it's easy to thin them in the trays.
Broccoli.
Transplant broccoli 100% of the time.
Brussels sprouts.
Transplant them 100% of the time.
Cabbage.
Transplant cabbage all the time, every time.
Cauliflower.
All the time, every time, transplant.
Carrots.
Carrots. Always want to direct seed carrots. And we'll, folks been asking about carrots already. I'll be planting my carrots. I usually wait till early, middle October. We'll do a video on that. You direct seed carrots and you do it in a band, not in a linear line like you do corn or beans. You do it in a band.
Thick.
Thick.
Chard.
Chard. You can do both with chard. So I'd say if you're doing real dense plantings, maybe for like some cut and come again, you're going to keep it real small. Direct seed it, like on a bed, you know, foot wide, 2 foot wide, whatever you like. If you're going for a bigger leaf chard, transplant it. You can put it on 6 or 12 inch spacing. Cut a few big leaves at the time. Have it all winter long.
Collards.
Collards. Same thing as chard here, kind of, but for different reasons. You can do both on collards. Plenty of people direct seed collards. If you do got some cheap collard seed that you just gonna kind of strow out there, almost like a cover crop, and just go cut you a few, you know, direct seed it. If you're growing something like the top bunch, transplant them so you get the most out of your seed.
If you've never grown those hybrid nice collards such as top bunch, I'd encourage you to do that. It's definitely worth a try. It's a little different, but it's, we've had real good results with them. English peas.
English peas. I've seen this done both ways. I've seen it work effectively both ways. I usually direct seed mine. I know plenty of people that transplant them. I'd say it's just a matter of how many you're planting. If I'm doing a 40-foot row, I'm probably just going to direct seed them. If I had me a little spot in the backyard, I had me a little arbor, and I was going to plant 3 or 4, I might transplant them.
I would lean toward direct seeding them. On English peas, peas and taurus don't have the best germination rate. And always plant your peas thick. That's the reason I always direct seed mine. I plant them thick. Kale.
You're going to have to give me a minute here. Mm-mm. So kale, it's kind of the same thing like it is with chard. You can plant it two ways. You can plant it real thick on a bed, cut it small, do a little bit of cutting coming in. You can do that really nice with some red Russian kale. Also, the way I like to grow kale mostly is transplant, and I put it on 1 foot spacing on the drip tape because I'm going to harvest the bottom leaves just like we do collards and let it grow and grow and grow. Those stalks will get 3, 4, 5 foot tall.
Kohlrabi.
Kohlrabi. Always transplant kohlrabi.
Garlic.
You skip one.
Leeks.
Leeks like onions, we always transplant leeks because you got to plant leeks real, real deep. So that if you can't plant that seed initially 6 foot deep like you need it to go, so you got to plant a seed tray and take your leek plant and plant it real deep.
Almost as post hole diggers.
Yep. You got to get it down there.
Garlic,
we plant from cloves, so, you know, it's not necessarily a seed or a transplant.
Lettuce,
you can do both here, too. If you're doing baby lettuce, cut and come again type lettuce, like our baby leaf mix, direct seed it on a bed, plant it real thick. If you're doing head lettuce, like our Skyphos or Tehama, which is one of my favorites, you want to start those from transplants. You can space them, you know, 8 to 12 inches apart.
mustard, greens.
Direct seed, mustard, and greens mixes.
Onions.
Onions, we're going to transplant onions.
Radishes.
With direct seed radishes.
Rutabagas.
Rutabagas is a little bit controversial because all the old timers will call you crazy for transplanting rutabagas. But I think you get more consistently sized big roots if you transplant them and give them a little more room. I space mine at, anywhere from 8 to 12 inches apart. I can't really direct seed them effectively that far apart. So that's why I like to transplant them. You can thin them. Spinach, you don't want to direct seed your spinach.
Yep. Turnips.
Turnips, you can do. There, just depends on which variety here. If you're just doing your purple tops or those white egg or hack or rye turnips, I'd say direct seed them all day. Now those all top turnips we got, those do pretty good as a transplant, just like a collard or kale or something like that. And those seeds do cost a little more, the all tops, but that's a great variety and I think they work really well as a transplant. Okay, now to our Q&A. We got 10 questions from last week's show. I had a lot of people giving us some good information, some good questions. And it looks like I'm up, so I'll let you kick it off.
First one's from Stephen Parsons. Hey, Mr. Greg and Travis, I really enjoy y'all's show. My name is Stephen, and I live in McCormick, South Carolina. I've been growing a spring garden for a few years now, mostly tomatoes, sweet corn, yellow crookneck squash, and crimson sweet watermelons. I've learned so much from y'all, and I'm so very thankful for what y'all do. I'm going to try my first cover crop and fall garden this year. I've already received some iron clay peas from y'all. I'm just waiting on the ground to dry up a bit. I was wondering if you could inform me on more information about monocots and dicots. I've been trying to research, but I'm still confused on how to rotate the two, monocots and dicots, into my future garden planting. Thank y'all again, and I love the stickers that come in each order. My lunchbox, my welding hood is sporting those fine stickers. Thanks again. Well, thank you, Stephen, for the kind words.
Uh-huh. So monocots and dicots, don't let it bog you down too much. If you just type monocot versus dicot in Google, you'll get a lot of nice little images popping up there. But it's just basically a way to differentiate types of two main types of plants. And there's several different things that are different between a monocot and a dicot. The first one is obviously in the name. Cot stands for cotyledon, which is within the seed. Monocots have one cotyledon, dicots have two, meaning two cotyledons. The other things are more, some of them are more visible on the large plant. The big thing you can always tell a monocot from a dicot, even if you don't know anything about plants, is the leaf venation. So on monocots, think about like corn, all the veins on the leaves are parallel. Think about a corn leaf or like sorghum sedan, all the leaf veins are parallel. On a dicot, the veins on the leaves are branching. So like think about an oak leaf or something, how it has all the branching with the veins. So you can look at any plant just by knowing that one distinction and tell if it's a monocot or a dicot. Other things have to do with the way the vascular tissue is arranged within the stem and the root system. Dicots have a tap root. Monocots, like corn, have a fibrous root system. You ever pulled up a corn stalk, you've seen that. So those are kind of the main differences. If you understand those, you can pretty much look at a plant and tell if it's monocot or dicot. When we're talking about the rotation, like I always say, this is not something you absolutely have to do, but it's something kind of neat to try to do because monocots do have their own set of mycorrhizas and dicots have their own sets of mycorrhiza. And the more you can diversify your soil mycorrhiza, the healthier soil you're gonna have.
Also, it has a different benefit on soil. The fibrous root system has a different way it affects the soil versus a tap root. Mm-hmm. So it's good to rotate the two.
Okay. This question is from Jimmy Taylor, and he says, enjoyed the show, was wondering Do you do a greens mix or something like that that could be left over winter as a cover crop to help break up hard soil?
We do have a greens mix, but we don't sell it as a cover crop. We sell it more as a greens mix to grow and harvest. I give this a little bit of thought, and I tell you what I think would work well. A daikon radish and a mustard green mix cocktail. Mm-hmm. I believe you could take the two, mix them together. You may want to seed them at the same time, seed them separately, whatever. I don't think it's going to matter a whole lot because your seed size is pretty close. You could mix them together and seed them at the same time. I think that would be a great cocktail. That daikon radish is going to go down and bust up that hard pan for clay soils, and that mustard is going to give you plenty of foliage on top, and we know it has some benefits for nematode suppression. So, man, I think that would be the ticket right there.
Yeah, and what happened there is, of course, a frost will bite back mustard a little bit, but it will knock back those radishes pretty good. Once the radishes get bit a little bit by the frost, then the mustards will kind of thrive a little more. Yeah, I think that's a really good idea.
You know what else? It just struck me. Uh-oh. That's a great food source, too. You can go out there and scavenge that cover crop in the wintertime and have you some nice mustard greens and daikon radishes. Uh-huh. Daikon radishes are also edible. We see them in the grocery store a lot. So not only does it serve as a great cover crop, it's a great food source.
That's right.
All right. Next one. Next. I got a little carried away there, didn't I?
Did you?
Next one's from Rodney Proctor, and he says, hey, a possible question for next week's show. Even though it's not Irish potato season, I just saw a video where the potatoes were planted under ground cover. When asked about healing, they stated as the variety was a determinate potato variety and would not benefit from healing. I'm 68 years old and wasn't aware there were a determinate varieties. Any thoughts?
Yeah, plenty of thoughts. Now, he said it wasn't Irish potato season, but I might have something to say about that. So this whole determinate and indeterminate potato thing, I really don't like the terminology because people try to relate that to what they know about determinate, indeterminate tomatoes, and it's just not the same. When you hear the word determinate potato, all that means is it's a shorter maturing variety or earlier maturing variety. Your red potatoes are what people call determinate potatoes. It really just means they have an early maturity date. So because they have an early maturity date, people say they don't need any healing. Now, we still heal ours for several reasons, mainly for weed suppression and just to kind of help support the plants. And it also makes it easy to kind of turn in some fertilizer to them. So we still heal ours. And depending on where you live, you may not see a huge difference between determinate and indeterminate. Now, in some areas where they stay cool for a real long time in spring and into the summer, what they can do with those indeterminate potatoes, they can keep throwing dirt on them, and they'll get a lot more potatoes by doing this continuous healing. Where we are, it gets hot so quick in May. It's just like walk outside, boom, one day, it's hot. That the indeterminates kind of die off quicker than they would in other places. So I would not use that terminology. I don't really like that terminology. I like to refer to potatoes as an early maturing, mid maturing, or late maturing variety. In that sense, though, if they did plant under the ground cover, they're not worried about weed suppression. Yeah, for them, healing wouldn't matter. Okay. Emma Hill says, I have raised beds and in-ground garden space. My question is, can I start my seeds in one of the raised beds and then transplant, pluck them out of there?
Heck yeah. I think it's a great way to grow onion starts.
Onions.
In a raised bed.
Also, I wouldn't do it with everything.
I think any of your brassicas would work. Now, the problem is, it's easy to grow more than what you need in that situation. But I think any of them would work. We used to grow cabbage plants like that.
How you get them out of there?
They call them lift them. You lift them, you put some underneath there and lift them up, and then you pull them up bare root.
Huh. Then they survive pretty well?
Oh, yeah, they do pretty good. Now, the key to it is not letting them lay out there. You want to pull them and then plant them and get some water on them. You don't want them laying out there in the sun all day while you're taking a nap. But if you can get them out of there and transplant them bare root, they do pretty darn good.
Huh.
You know, you could take a raised bed and you could grow a lot of cabbage plants. So the problem would be, I mean, you'd want to grow you a little bit of, you'd want to separate them, grow you some cauliflower, broccoli. Yeah, I think it'll work. You need good, soft potting soil.
it'll work on a small scale.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Because I would imagine.
No, I wouldn't want to do it with beets.
Yeah, getting them out of the raised bed carefully is going to take a lot longer than plucking them from a transplant tray.
Yes, but when we're talking about somebody that's all they got is a raised bed to do it.
Right.
So, I mean, I'm not saying it's the most, it's not proper English here. I'm not saying it's the best way to do it, but I said it is possible.
I got you. I'm following you.
Mm. Excuse me.
About to drink half our hunch punch.
So, Gary, help me here.
Just call him Gary.
Just Gary says, hello, Travis. I have a couple carrot questions. What is your fertilization schedule for carrots? Do you need to be careful about watering carrots after germination as the root crops like potatoes? Hmm. Is there a problem with them rotting in the grow? Hmm. I am planning to try 3 or 4 rows of them this fall. Hmm. I added the in there.
I have rarely had any issues with carrots rotting because it's too wet. Now, I plant mine thick, double rows, and I got a band of them on each side of the tape. And I usually feed them pretty well with the water, especially once they get up and going. I mean, I'll soak that bed on a regular basis. Yeah, they can get too wet. If we have real rainy spring, I have seen some rot before. But if you got relatively well-drained soil, I say, you know, pump the water to them pretty regular. As far as the fertilization schedule, some people say, you know, to give them a lot more a lot more P and K than you do nitrogen. I usually just give mine the 20-20-20, and I like to have the nice big tops on them because it makes it easier to pull them. And then the phosphorus and the potassium gives me some nice big carrot roots there. So I give them 20-20-20. I'll do it with carrots probably once a month, seeing as how I plant them in October and then harvest them in February, March. It's an extended growing time because I'm overwintering. So I'll feed mine about once a month that way. Number 6 is from Cindy Gardner. Do you think that's her last name, or she just likes to garden and calls herself Cindy Gardner?
I like the name, though.
Yeah.
Greg Gardner.
She wants to know, can you grow garlic in fabric containers?
Yes, yes, and yes. Fabric containers have become really popular as of late. The first time I seen them.
Popular or popular?
Both. First time I seen them was about, about 12 years ago. I was at Las Vegas at the International Hardware Show.
Uh-huh.
And that's when they pretty much got started coming out there. Have become really popular, and for good reason, because when you're not using them, they're easy to stow away. You can bunch them up, and I mean, it's not like a big pot. It takes up a lot of room.
Got a handle on them, I think, don't they?
They're easy to ship, and they actually work pretty good for plants.
Yeah.
So yes, you can grow about anything in those fabric containers.
Yeah, I think they work perfect for garlic. You can take one, assuming you had one that was about 1 square foot there, you could plant you one in each corner and have you 4 nice little garlic plants in there.
Jeremy Sims says, my family and I are moving from Alabama Zone B, 8A, line down to Bay St. Louis, Mississippi. No, there was such thing. Anyhow, he's moving to Bay St. Louis, Mississippi, Zone 9. Do you have any advice for the difference in climate and growing techniques that I may not be accustomed to? Any advice would be helpful. Love the show as always. And as always, thank you guys.
I thought this was a really interesting, good question. We probably could did a whole show on recommendations for someone that was making this move. It doesn't seem like that far of a move. I mean, it would be like somebody moving from north of Atlanta down here. But as far as your growing season goes, it's going to open up a whole nother realm of possibilities of things you can grow and your growing season and everything. And like I said, I could talk about this for a while, but I'll just give you a few examples. Okay, you moving from there down to Zone 9, you can now overwinter onions like we can. Whereas you probably couldn't do that up in 7B, you can do that now in Zone 9, so you can plant your onions in November, overwinter them, make some nice big onions. You're gonna be able to grow food all year round. You're not gonna have to worry about a whole lot of frost. If you do get a frost like us, it's going to be pretty minimal. It's not going to really bite anything back. Now, your warm season growing is going to change a good little bit. You got to go. You're gonna have to get your stuff in the ground earlier. You're gonna need to be getting tomatoes and corn and all that stuff in the ground in March, early April. Come early to mid April, you need to have all your warm stuff in the ground, if not sooner. So you're gonna have to be on the ball a little bit there, because come August and September, you're gonna be like we just did and taking a break. It's gonna change a good little bit for you. If you follow our schedule, you should be pretty close on time. The whole night, you're probably a little bit south of us, but so you might be have a little bit of jump on us in the spring. But yeah, a lot of things can change, a lot of opportunities opening up for that kind of move.
That was about a half a biscuit answer you gave right there.
Yeah. All right. Number 8 is from Sherry Lovan. And it says Sherry, then it says my name's Mike. Mike must be using his wife's Gmail account. They live in Bowling Green, Kentucky. And I want to know if the clover we have is inoculated. He sees it as pelleted. Wants to know if it's important to have it inoculated. And then a two-parter here. Second part. We've talked about sunflowers as a cover crop detoxifying your soil. He wants to know if it's doing that, should you not incorporate it back into the soil?
All right, so let's take the first question first. We should always do that, haven't we?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay,
that's proper.
Crimson clover, the one we sell is inoculated. It has the inoculant already on there, and it is, I guess you could say, pelleted too. With this inoculant on there, it forms a little small pellet, so the seed is a good bit bigger, more consistent and round than regular clover seed.
Easier to strug.
If you've ever tried to put dry inoculant on a raw seed, you'll understand why it's so important to buy these seeds already with the inoculant on them, because it's so much easier, believe you me. Now, if you've had peas or clover or any type of legume grown where you're going to put these clovers in the last few years, odds are you have those beneficial bacteria already present in your soil. So it's not always important to have these clover seeds inoculated, because that beneficial bacteria is probably already there if you have grown some type of legume there in the last few years. However, if you have not, then you want to incorporate this inoculant onto the seed. It's just a good insurance policy to do. So the clover we have is inoculated with that. It's good insurance. If you need it, fine. If you don't, fine. It's there anyway.
Well, we don't inoculate anything yet, sun hemp or anything like that. Any other legumes, we don't inoculate.
No, the clover is pretty much the only one that's warm.
Yeah.
So it's really not that important on soil, like garden soils that you've been planting and you just want to put a cover crop on. It's not important at all. If you put it on raw, virgin soil, yeah, I think it's probably important to put on there. Something's maybe been in timberland for years and years. Mm-hmm. I can see it being beneficial there. And the inoculant actually helps with the process of drawing the nitrogen in and keeping those nodules full of oxygen on the soils there.
Mm-hmm.
So there you have it on that. And let's talk about the sunflowers. When the sunflowers detoxifies that soil, it's not like it stores all those toxic things up there in the top. And when you till it back in, it releases them again. The biological process actually cleans it all. So yeah, it's fine to put it back into soil. That biological process that it goes through, it's going to degrade those toxins and put all that organic back in soil.
Yeah, yeah.
It ain't stored it up and you're going to run by there.
It's not like a trash bag up there. Yeah. It's holding on to.
Yeah. All right. So Rebellion Point Farms wants to know, with fall on us, I am planting again, but I have kept the garden full all year. What kind of broad range fertilizer can I use to put nutrient levels good? Something to add before I plant. Once I get my plan all worked out, can I fertilize according to each crop? But since the COVID, I have used every drop of ground I have with no cover crops in between. I do not want to deplete my soil.
You don't want to deplete your soil, that's for sure. And you can do that if you farm it too hard. I'm gonna show you some stuff right here that'll make you, in Rebellion Point Farms case, it's gonna be ideal, but this stuff right here can also make you look like a hero. And you don't have to know a whole lot. You don't have to be an experienced professional, long time, been gardening all my life person for this stuff right here to make you look like a hero. And you just put some down in the furrow before you plant and put some more down about 3 or 4 weeks later. And this stuff does really, really well. I have gotten accustomed to using it on a fairly regular basis, and can't say enough good things about it. It's just simple, it's easy. Now, it's not gonna work as fast as injecting through the drip. It's not supposed to. I will still accompany it with some of that every now and then. But if you're on a small scale, small backyard garden or even containers, raised beds, this stuff right here does well. It kind of slow feeds everything, keeps your soil nutrient levels at a good place.
You've heard the old cliche, feed your soil. Well, that's exactly what this here does.
It's organic.
Organic.
Okay, last one is from Elisa Van. Just Elisa. Says, we enjoy your Thursday night evening shows. Question, we're in Zone B and it gets too hot in the greenhouse. We're starting fall transplants. What's the optimal temperature to start fall seeds? Do you have any other ideas on where to put them? And do they require additional grow lights to start in the shade?
Well, growing transplants for the fall, we always kind of had to start them before the temperature thinks it's time to tell us to do. Now's the time for us to plant them in 80 degree days is pretty much what we're looking at. Now, our temperatures are starting, as we talked about, they're starting to fall off a little bit. Right now is a good time to start your fall transplants. Now, when you get your transplants grown, ready to go into the soil, then you're looking at a little bit different temperature. Your nights are going to cool off into the high 50s, low 60s. Your days are going to be in the high 70s, maybe early 80s at most. But that's kind of where you're at. You want to start them now for zone 8. You know, the greenhouse situation, there's a lot of greenhouses out there that was designed for up north, and they didn't keep ventilation in mind. The greenhouse that we have has a big curtain on each side we can raise up, so we can grow those crops in there when it's hot. If you're looking for a greenhouse, ventilation is a huge issue, especially here in the south, to be able to get that air circulation there and keep them cool, because we actually have more problems with them being hot than we do cold.
I would say if you're in zone 8 or 9 or below, don't buy a greenhouse if it ain't got roll-up doors on it.
Absolutely. You know, you can start these seeds inside and get them germinating, then you can move them to underneath some grow lights or either move them outside where you can tend to them, keep them watered. I would not try to grow them under part shade. I think they're going to need full sun. There you have it.
Yeah, I agree. Don't try to grow them in the shade. Either grow them full sun or do it inside on the grow lights. Be better off there. And with your greenhouse, you might consider adding some type of ventilation device there.
Fan, whatever you can do.
Keep it cool in there. All right, well, that was all 10. We got 3 goodies right here we're gonna give away. Particular order. Let's go from littlest to biggest.
Littlest to biggest, that would be all right.
All right, so we got our 10 numbers right here.
And then let's show everybody what we're pulling from. This is upside down, we're pulling from the Cog Hill hat.
Yeah, studies have shown that's the best kind of hat to do a drawing from.
Absolutely.
Okay, you go ahead.
Okay, the first one that is going to win is going to be, wow, folded them up well, did you? Number six,
which is old Cindy Gardner.
Cindy Gardner, what did Cindy win?
Cindy won
survival tool
here. Let's show Cindy what she's won here. Cindy can send us any
now
of you.
Cindy, we need your address.
Any of you winners here, if y'all send us your address to cusserve@hosstools.com, you get you a nice little camping tool or chicken butchering tool or whatever you want to do with it. Self-defense tool.
Yeah.
All right, got one more here. 2 more, actually.
And this one winner would be number 10.
Number 10, which was...
You're going to have to work that one out.
Elisa?
Lisa, what's Lisa's last name?
Elisa Van, I don't like it.
Spell it.
F-O-E-K-E-N. So at the bottom from
Elisa's got to know where
Uncommon Farms. Well, she'll see it on the We throw it up on the screen. Gotcha. You'll see. So Lisa wins a nice little hatchet right here.
Lisa, this is a great one right here. This is one of my favorites. A little Condor.
I like because it's got that hammer knocker side to it right there. If you hitch or something else is giving you some trouble, you can hammer knock it in just like that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we got one more.
I didn't know we had one of these left. Is this the very last one we got?
I ain't so sure. One more.
I dropped one. I'm going to go with this one. Whew, number eight. Boy, his winners was all in the high numbers today. Sherry Lovan.
Sherry Lovan wins our...
Or Mike Lovan.
Mike. Yeah, Mike would be happy about it. Yeah. He wrote a question, maybe. They have to split it. Well, the good thing is it's a double bit axe.
Yeah, Mike can use one side. Yeah, Sherry can use
the other side. This will be Mike's side. This will be Sherry's side right here. So, y'all send us your address to cusserve@hosstools.com. And we'll get these out to you. Thank everybody for participating, playing. Always have fun with these all question shows like this. And I believe next week we probably it's time to do a show on seed starting tips and demonstration. And always good to do that every now and then. So we'll probably be doing that this next week. Have any questions about seed starting or anything about that? Put those in the comments so we can include that as a part of our show next week.
Yes, sir.
If you enjoyed this week's show, don't forget to give us a big thumbs up, like, share, subscribe, hit the bell button, all that stuff you need to be doing. We'll see you next time.
Take care.